You're listening to a podcast from 702.
And I want us to talk about this data that was released last week. So there's research that was published, which was funded by global drinks manufacturer Distell, and it found that curfews and mobility restrictions had a much greater effect than alcohol bans on reducing trauma admissions to hospitals during lockdown. And this research said trauma cases under lockdown dropped 60%, but this was more likely due to curfews and mobility restrictions. But scientists and doctors have criticized the research, saying that it's poor. So what we've done now is want to get two sides of the story. I'll bring in Ian Megorian, who is a data analyst and MD of Silver Fox Consulting, worked on this research. And then I will bring in Professor Sue Goldstein as well, who's a board member at the Southern African Alcohol Policy Alliance, so we understand what they think is problematic about the research. So Ian, thank you so much for making time. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So I'm looking at just perhaps the summary that was sent out by the alcohol industry, summary of the research, and it says on alcohol and trauma, there's no evidence that an alcohol ban works. Alcohol restrictions were imposed at the same time as other restrictions like curfew, travel restrictions, and restrictions on gatherings. Does the research suggest that there is no link at all between alcohol ban and trauma cases?
Definitely not. That is not the scope of the research. It is clear that there is a linkage between alcohol abuse and trauma admissions. What we are saying is that it is very difficult to disentangle the alcohol ban from all the other restrictions that were put in place. And when we test using standard statistical modeling, when we test for these effects, what we see is that actually the curfew and the reduction in mobility and reduction in interaction between people has a stronger association with the drop in trauma admissions. I think it's very important at this point to say that this has been observed in other countries in the world, that trauma admissions dropped substantially with the imposition of lockdowns. And I make the point that in these other countries, there was no alcohol ban. In other words, what you're seeing is the same effect happening in other countries in the world, that trauma admissions reduced dramatically.
What data specifically did you look at and from where? Because I saw the Medical Research Council saying that the kind of data that you claim to have relied on has not been released yet.
Well, the data has been released in various forms at various points in time by the MRC. They do presentations on this all the time, where in some presentations they have the numbers and some they don't. But using a collection of all of that data, we are able to replicate the admission patterns. I do, however, find it astonishing that we would be regarding a lack of transparency as a good thing. Surely in formulating policy, we should have absolute transparency.
There are people that are asking questions around, you know, the ethics in research. For instance, the issue of the research being properly peer reviewed. How many peer reviewers did you have on this research paper?
Two peer reviewers.
So you had two Professor peer Mike, reviewers.
Yes, Professor Mike Murray and Professor Graham Barr.
Okay, and is that sufficient when you're working on a research paper?
Absolutely, it's sufficient. There's not a limitation or a maximum number of peer reviewers that you should have. The peer review process kicks into play once you publish the research for inclusion in the journal, which we are not yet at a stage ready to do. But we have every intention of doing so. The problem for us is a time constraint, that these bans are coming thick and fast, And we simply need to get another voice at the table, that, a voice at the table that is currently dominated by one particular narrative.
Is there no implicit bias here because the research was funded by an affected party? There's an argument that every time that is the case, you know, that will come with this bias that requires a perhaps greater scrutiny.
I think it's very difficult to answer the question without pointing out that a lot of research is funded. That is what drives the scientific endeavor. And corporations are responsible for funding a lot of research. The need here was to examine critically, are we seeing a causal effect from alcohol, which is what is being claimed? And the claim for causality simply does not stand up to scrutiny. There is an association, clearly an association. But to make the step to causality is simply a step too far.
So you're saying it doesn't stand cross scrutiny. All right, Ian, I want to bring in Professor Sue Goldstein now, who is the board member at the Southern Africa Alcohol Policy Alliance. Prof, thank you so much for joining the conversation. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So Ian argues that the claim for causal, doesn't stand scrutiny. And I want you to talk to us about the pre-existing data that we have, the pre-existing research. Does it document this causal link between alcohol restrictions and trauma admissions?
So the data that we have, which is an incredible natural experiment in South Africa, but all over the world, it's been clearly documented that restricting access to alcohol decreases not only trauma, but huge amounts of health problems. So what fascinates me is looking at saying that there's one perspective. Actually, the perspective is the perspective of people's health, which comes from a whole lot of people. And I just want to read to you about something that comes from South African Medical Association, which really is just recently come out, that the deterring role of the alcohol industry in alcohol policy formulation and implementation in the country must effectively be challenged. And I think what is clear to me is that this research was designed not to be accurate and not to necessarily be all that convincing, but to create doubt. And this is the playbook that they've taken from the tobacco industry. So as long as they create doubt in the policymakers' minds, it doesn't matter how accurate the research is or whether it's published in a peer-reviewed journal, etc. So that is my kind of perspective on whether or not it works. From the perspective of causality, you know, there's the Hills documents which looks at different aspects of causality, and it's been shown very effectively that alcohol causes increase in trauma. I mean, it's just unquestionable. And if you speak to any doctor who's ever worked in a casualty in South Africa, you will know that alcohol is totally related to trauma.
Yeah, and we've spoken to many doctors who, in fact, on the show have indicated that case, and they'll talk about that increase in trauma cases. And even when the ban, is lifted, you see that increase, and sometimes even with the same curfew remaining at play. I want to play a quick interview of Dr. Nkele Lisiya, who is the CEO at the Chris Hani Baragwanath Hospital. I spoke to her on the midday report sometime last year, asking her to give us an indication as to, you know, what they're observing in terms of trauma cases when the ban of alcohol is lifted.
Indeed, since yesterday, in 24 hours in our trauma unit, we have observed that the number of patients has now increased. Just to give an example, on the 31st of May, we only saw 66 trauma patients. But yesterday, within 24 hours after alcohol was allowed, the same number of patients in trauma unit almost doubled up. And majority of the patients were actually drunk. We see patients with stab wounds, gunshot wounds, and general assaults. And as clearly, I mean, the unbanning of alcohol is going to increase the number of trauma cases we are seeing. Mm. During the lockdown, level 5 lockdown, we did not see, our trauma unit was actually empty. During level 4 lockdown, we saw some cases, but they were much reduced than before the lockdown.
How big... Sorry, Doctor, I wanted to ask, how big is that a concern? From now on, people have access to alcohol. What impact do you think this will continue to have down the line, especially as hospitals try and prepare for a surge in COVID-19 cases where more people may need to be hospitalized?
Yeah, this is not, I mean, for us as a hospital, we're really going to have challenges with this unbanning of alcohol, because the increase in number of trauma cases, it means we need to, you know, we have to ventilate some of these patients who are suffering from trauma injuries. So it means our wards are going to be, you know, trauma ward, the resource area is going to be full, and this has got a backflow. If resource is full, then generally our medical side of the emergency department is going to have an impact as well. And in the present climate where we're dealing with COVID conditions as well, it is not ideal to have overcrowding, especially in the emergency department.
Yeah.
Because that can contribute to spreading of the, because we have to screen all of these patients, which means now, even after hours, you know, screening of patients that come after hours is going to be a challenge for us. Because we don't want, we'd like to screen them before they actually come into the emergency department.
So that
is going to increase the waiting time in the screening tents, because we have to make sure that they bypass the screening before they actually get assistance.
That is a big concern. So that's the conversation I had with Dr. Nkelele Siya, the CEO of the Chris Hani Baragwanath Hospital. Ian, this is what the doctors are telling us. They make that causal link between the sale of alcohol, alcohol restrictions and the trauma admissions, whether you're talking about the curfew being in place or not. Because yes, you can still have a curfew for 10 p.m. or much earlier, but if people have that access to alcohol, they can drink alcohol, they act irrationally, they can be violent towards each other, and the trauma cases have been seen by doctors even when there's a curfew in place. Yes, Ian?
Thank you. Please, can I be very clear on this? Of course, there's a relationship between patients admitted to trauma that where alcohol is present. Nobody is denying that. That is not the point that is being made. The point that is being made is that when you have a whole raft of restrictions that get put in place, it is incredibly difficult to disentangle one particular regulation and say, this is the regulation that caused this drop. When so many, you know, traffic mobility was down, contact crime was down by about the same percentage, all of these other factors come into play. Our world is not a one-dimensional world where there's only one thing that influences events. And we are certainly aware and well aware of that there's a portion of our population that has a harmful relationship with alcohol. We're acutely aware of that, and we strive as an industry, the liquor industry strives for measured interventions that are balanced and reasonable. But banning alcohol for the whole country seems to be a very blunt instrument, and it has led to enormous damage to both the economy and the livelihoods of hundreds of thousands of people.
And people have appreciated that impact, Ian. Even government has actually acknowledged that impact. But it is the ban on the sale of alcohol that, as you heard from the doctors, that often helps. And that's why I said, even if you stay with the same curfew at 10 p.m. or at 9 p.m., but the causal link they're looking at is alcohol is actually a problem. But here's what the problem people have. Here's what people have as a problem about this research is it's created that impression. And that's why Professor Sue Goldstein speaks about doubt that is created. Because what you are telling us now is, well, the greater focus should not just be on alcohol. And it creates an impression that the next time government bans the sale of alcohol, you know, people will then question, yeah, but why are you doing that when there's research that's actually found that there is no causal link And government can argue, like they did during the Easter holidays, that they kept the curfew the same, but they just banned the sale of alcohol because they're trying to reduce the number of cases. Are you not worried about how the alcohol industry is now using this research to create that doubt?
The intention is not to create doubt. The intention is to bring another voice to the table. I fail to see why that would be problematic. After all, we live in a democracy. Surely every voice has a right to be heard.
No, I agree with you there, Ian. What I'm asking is the research and what it's used for. And that's why I was asking earlier about how it was funded, because it was funded by Distell. And the issue with that is people feel this is an affected party here. So there is this implicit bias concern that people are noticing, because this is Distell that says, here's the funding, go and do that research. And people are asking themselves, why should I trust Ian and the research that they've done when it's been funded by the people who, in fact, want to hear what this research has actually found?
I fully understand the question. And as I've said before, most, if not all, research is funded. How that detracts from the results of the research, that's really for people to make their own minds up. And, you know, the research stands for itself and it is open to either being replicated or being tested. I think the question I would have is, in this case, the burden of proof surely rests with the government to describe the research that they have done, to indicate that an alcohol ban with its devastating effects on the economy and on the country and on people's livelihoods, surely the burden of proof is on the government to show the research that led them into this path of constantly banning alcohol.
Yeah, yeah. What methodology did you use?
Standard statistical modeling. We used ARIMA models, regression models, and we played off univariate models against multivariate models using data that is publicly available.
Okay. Ian, thank you so much for coming through. I appreciate you coming and telling us how you went about this research that has been criticized by some scientists and doctors. Professor Sue Goldstein, are you satisfied with how Ian is explaining how this research was done? He's suggesting that, look, they're not saying there is no link completely between, you know, restrictions on alcohol and trauma cases, but he says it needs to be looked at holistically with the other restrictions like curfews that would be put in place.
Thank you, Clement. You know, it's very interesting to hear how the argument is. I think, first of all, there was a huge slip in Ian's vocabulary when he said we and he referred to the industry.
I heard that.
Obviously,
yeah.
that conflict of interest is massive. But I think the other problem that and many other researchers have said is that this is a report. It's not a peer-reviewed paper, and they don't report on the methods. I mean, he talks now about regression models. A lot of models are very much determined by what you put into them. So, you know, the old saying, rubbish in equals rubbish out. So we don't know. I'm not saying the research is rubbish, but we don't know what it is because there's no discussion of the methods.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other point that I must make, Clement, is that in the press release that they sent out, they tried to create doubt as to whether South Africa has a drinking problem or not. And I just want to put in that the 2018 Global Health Status Report on Alcohol said that nearly half South African men and 19% of women consumed alcohol, with as high as 70.8% of male drinkers and a third of female drinkers, heavy episodic drinkers. Now, these heavy episodic drinkers are the real problem. So what we're saying is that actually only half or less of the population drinks. So when you look at a per capita consumption, it looks low because half of the country are not drinking at all. So what we've got is we've got the per capita of those who do drink being incredibly high. It's 29.9, where the world average is 8.
Mm.
So I think that there's been a lot of disingenuous statements coming out in this. And obviously, for the industry, they want to keep going. They want to make profits. But yeah, we're arguing that this is at the expense of people's health and well-being.
All right. Thank you for your time, Professor. In fact, the statement, the headline for the statement that was released by the Calcol industry about this research is: new data analysis reveals surprising insights about alcohol harm in South Africa. Professor Sue Goldstein is the board member at the Southern African Alcohol Policy Alliance, data analyst and MD of Silver Fox Consulting, Ian McGorian. Thank you so much for also making time.